What is up, the world? We are the Leveling Up Podcast. It's your boy, Brandon, your co-boy, Felix.
Yo.
Yo! And we don't have Salvador with us today.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. Salvador was a good man. Nah, he's still around. He's our homie. He just couldn't make it today. He got a new job, so scheduling's a little off for him, but...
Hey, Sal. We miss you.
We love you, big boy.
Baby, come back.
Today we're talking about all kinds of stuff. We got news being our announcements, all being our announcements at this point, but Jumpstart on Arena, step boosters, all kinds of stuff. But it's been a while. What's your rank on Arena right now?
Not very high. I think I'm still in like silver one. Mostly what happened, my laptop went to shit. It's always been pretty bad, and I've usually had to run it on the low power setting mm-hmm. on Arena just to get it to function all the way, but it crashed on me a couple more times than I'd like, so I didn't get to play as much. But no, I've been playing Magic though, just not as much as on Arena, just a little bit more on paper,
more modern, right?
Yeah.
So we can still have good discussions.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I also have kind of been playing less Arena, mostly because this podcast was kind of the thing motivating me to like keep playing Arena, and we kind of took a break there for a little bit.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks.
Yeah. We took a break. We were just having scheduling issues. But we're back. We're going to try to keep it bi-weekly again.
Yeah, we're going to try to stay pretty fairly consistent however we can.
Okay, so you played some Magic. You played more paper, though. What kind of things did you look for when you were playing? How did you get better?
Well, I think the last few weeks were more just anticipating the recent Arkham's Astrolabe ban in Modern.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a BNR announcement that had been announced a few weeks ago. People were speculating that it was going to be something from like Ban Control. There were like four or five different cards that people wanted on the chopping block, and they hit Arkham's Astrolabe. So it was kind of like, because I played that deck, I had to kind of anticipate what I needed to do with the deck next.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, anticipate what the metagame is going to look like next and have to, like, adjust my sideboard on top of adjusting, like, my 75 or my main deck.
And Arkham's Astrolabe was the big one on that list, right? Like, there was other ones, but they were for, like, Historic. And
Yeah. There was, I think there was a Legacy ban, too.
Mm.
I think the only format that hadn't been touched was, like, no. It was a Pioneer ban.
Yeah.
A Pioneer ban. And an unbanned.
It wasn't Inverter.
Yeah, that was a little different. I don't know as much about Pioneer, because of the whole COVID thing that's happened.
Yeah, we got to play a lot less Pioneer.
Yeah, there were going to be some PTQs that we were going to try to stop by,
mm-hmm.
And those were Pioneer ones before the shutdown happened. But
Right, like I was listening, I think, to the Goldfish podcast, and they're like, Wizards wants Pioneer to die. They're not banning Inverter, seeing all these other decks were also beating Inverter, but they were just other combo decks, which I get that sentiment, but also, like, there's not a lot of people playing Pioneer right now.
Yeah.
Because there's no PTQs or events going on for it, so I can see them just kind of keep it in and wait until...
Yeah, I think this, the whole pandemic thing, just, I think it made some, it forced Wizards to change their plans, because I'm sure they were all in on Pioneer. I think they had announced like a whole bunch of like GPs, Magic Fest that were going to have Pioneer.
They're not PPTQs anymore, are they? Like that?
They're just PTQs now. They like renamed them back to PTQs, I think. But it means something else, I think. Mythic Championship Qualifier, something, one of those two.
No, Pioneer for sure. I think it's a format that's going to make a comeback once Paper Magic actually starts.
So, yeah, I think Pioneer, they were planning to go all in on it, and COVID happened, and then I think everyone was just staying home. Wizards was capitalizing on Arena. Historic was starting to catch on, and then with Jumpstart, I think they just went all in on that. Mm-hmm. So just seeing that they're focusing on Historic right now, and the lack of Pioneer... or professional Magic, I guess, Circuit Magic. I think that really forced them to just switch over their plans, and I think it does contribute to that perception of why Pioneer looks like it's dying. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll be fine. I think once things get back up and going, I think they're going to reassess what's going on.
Right. Like, Historic's the kind of the Pioneer on Arena right now, but those cards that are in Historic right now are kind of harder to get access to in paper. So I think Pioneer will make an uptick, like I said, once.
Yeah.
Once everything comes back to somewhat normal, once we can start having events again, even if that's with, like, masks and stuff. I want to play in a tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've had to go back to, like, kitchen table Magic, you know, get a just, like, one or two buddies to come over.
You know what? We just, the whole game, we're playing, like, super kitchen table Magic, that we're like, look at my colossal Drenma!
And we're supposed to be leveling up.
We just forgot how to play Magic entirely.
Sorry, guys. We're going to start from back from square one.
But, no. Right now, I'm, like, plat. Last, the season just ended on Arena, and I ended, like, Platinum 1. I was playing less to climb the ladder this time, though, like I was last time. Last time, I just wanted to climb the ladder. I was kind of streaming a little bit, so I wanted to get some Mythic level gameplay and try to test some stuff out. But, this time, I was doing more sideboard stuff. I was playing more to learn than I was to win, which I think is an important
thing. Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. I'm just making excuses for why I didn't make Mythic.
No. Stop.
But, like, that's really what I was doing this time. I was trying out sideboard stuff. Something I learned while playing Standard, and I think that cat's out of the bag now. It's been a couple of weeks, but, like, I started testing out Jolrael. In Bant.
Yeah.
And, like, I didn't know why I didn't think this card was gonna be not, like, ridiculous in that deck. But there's about 3,800 different ways to draw cards in that deck.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I remember when that card got spoiled. Like, I didn't know anything about it. Like, I didn't know how to evaluate it correctly, because it said whenever you draw your second card on your opponent's turn or something like that, that's when the effect activates. But the fact that it was one in a green, I was like, there's something to be done with that card. I knew that I felt like that had kind of a bit of a Young Pyromancer vibe, but I couldn't quite place my finger on what it was. But, like, I'm glad to see that it's, like, popped up in Bant and it's taken over.
Yeah, it's doing stuff. I definitely slept on that card. I did not think it was going to be as good as it was. But like, you can play your Hydroid Krasis as a 2-2, right?
Yeah.
Draw your one card, and then you get another 2-2. So it's almost like you made a 4-4 Hydroid Krasis. So you're like, hey,
yeah.
I'm not losing value. I'm still getting a ton of value out of this card.
No, what is it? Did I already go on my Shark Typhoon rant last time? Like, I know I've talked about Shark Typhoon and being
I'll let
like,
you
I
do
just,
it again.
I love the fact that that card exists, but, like, I've been seeing it pop up more in Modern now, especially in, like, the blue-white control list, this blue-white Stoneblade list, and, like, I just love the fact that that card, I was kind of right. It's not a broken card, but I remember when Ikoria was spoiled, thinking, like, hey, you know, they've been printing some busted stuff lately. Mm-hmm. They're gonna do cycling. I feel like there's something to be done with that whole cycling thing. That something is gonna slip through the cracks, and it's gonna be, you know, we're not gonna see it coming till after the fact. I mean, granted, I feel like maybe Wizards did this correctly. I think Wizards designed Shark Typhoon correctly, but I think the fact that that card has a very high ceiling in Magic, It brings so much joy to my heart.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's a little hard to play against Shark Typhoon just because you can't interact with the actual card, but you can still interact with that token in about 400 different ways, so I don't think it's bad. You know, if they just kind of pass a turn and have, like, 12 mana up, you're like, okay, maybe I should leave, like, something to bounce
did
this
you
token.
Know, did you know that flying sharks can equip swords?
I heard they're really good at holding swords. Oh, damn. There's some Cobblade stuff.
Yeah.
Dude, I remember the first time learning about Cobblade. I laughed so hard when I, like, because Cobblade sounded cool, and I didn't realize, like, Cobblade was because Squadron Hawk.
Yeah.
It's just the bird going, ka! And holding a sword. Like, now I think that's the stupidest name, and I love it, but I thought it was, like, a really cool name when I first started.
I think right now, one of the names for the Blue-White Stoneblade list is Blue-White Sharkblade.
Hell yeah.
Which is, like, amazing. Like, I love, like, personally, like, I'm kind of sad in the list that I've been seeing that they haven't been running Spellqueller. Kind of as that gotcha card. I saw that they were leaning more into the control-oriented route, so not having as many creatures other than maybe Stoneforge and Snapcaster. But Shark Typhoon is a perfectly good non-creature spell that you can get value out of. And, I mean, if you can somehow, you know, get ahead of the game and you want to slam down a Shark Typhoon for 7 mana and start casting some big sharks, you know, that's always fun to do too.
Right. Yeah, I think when people were originally evaluating that card, they saw more of the 6 mana enchantment.
Yeah, no, I think so too. Mm-hmm. I think everybody saw the meme. I think Shark Typhoon is like,
yeah,
you know.
And then they're like, oh, this card's good. And then it like spiked up to $7, and I still think it's sitting up there. I still think it's climbing too. So
yeah, but it's one. It was one of the better cards for Mikori outside of the whole companions pre errata.
Right. I really like playing with those pre errata companions, though. They were really stupid. I definitely would have got bored of them really quick if we kept going down that route, I think. But
I think for them, well, I think that's a whole different topic entirely.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. But like,
what they could have done to fix companion, like, we're going to put our game designer hats and we're going to assume like we know how to fix magic.
Before the show, we were going on your Oko rant. I'm just thinking about like Orion Simic.
I think Yorion is a good card. I think still, if we had Oko in Modern, I understand that it's banned, but I think I would love to see Oko. I would love to see Yorion Once Upon a Time, Earl, yeah, Field of the Dead.
Just to like watch the world.
But the fact that like literally almost every single one of those cards has gotten some form of action from WotC, it's rough. Can't ever. A man can dream.
You know, we should. Me and you should just play Unbanned Standard one day and just see what happens. Yeah. Like, I'll play pre-errata like Luris or something.
And yeah, you can play companions, and I can just play. Oh, yeah.
And you know what? You can play a companion in Oko. Just go for
it. you can play. Well,
80 card.
You can do Luris. You can do. Oh no, Luris. Luris is two or less, right? Never mind.
I'm just thinking Yorion and Uros and
so much value. Nissa, Field of the Dead, Earl, Once Upon a Time, Oko.
That sounds awful.
That sounds amazing. I'm sorry. That's just amazing.
You're like, I'm sorry, man. That just sounds like me lighting the world on fire with blue spells. How did this happen?
That's exactly how I'd light the magic on fire. Like that deck. Yeah.
Okay. So we were talking a little about BNR. Let's go into it. We got some news. So we got the BNR announcements. This is old news now, but Arkham's Ashenlight was banned, and I still want to get our thoughts on it. I think it was the correct ban.
Yeah.
Out of all the cards, they were thinking Uro, they were thinking
Thinking Mystic Sanctuary, they were thinking Teferi, they were thinking Vale of Summer, they were thinking what else? Because basically everything in Bant Control was apparently an abomination.
I mean, I feel that, but
I mean, like, I agree.
They were thinking about Bant.
I agree. But I think Astrolabe was the correct call. I think there was some chatter about banning Uro. I think if they would have done that, I think that would have been the worst case scenario. But
yeah.
The fact that the metagame has shifted in a way that it punishes the more greedy mana bases that we've seen out of these control decks, because their mana bases are still greedy even after Astrolabe. So, you know, you can get in a good Blood Moon in. But yeah, I think Astrolabe was the correct call. I think it fixed a lot of the problems that the format was having.
Yeah, Astrolabe was really the card that kind of put that map up, that deck on the map. That map on the deck. The deck on the map.
But, I agree.
And that deck's not gone either. Like, that combination is just so powerful that they're like, we're going to keep playing it.
Yeah, you know who...
The mana base is a lot more taxed.
You know
now.
Who else can hold a sword pretty well? A Flying Snake. I mean...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you just swap out the Astrolabes with some Stoneforge Mystics, a Batterskull, a couple swords that you like, bada bing, bada boom, everyone's happy.
Yeah, you know. God, Sword of Feast and Famine, so good.
Yeah. I love that card.
Yeah.
I love that card.
It doesn't play Sophie at all, right?
I've seen it as a one of in some lists. I think Batterskull and Sword of Feast and Famine is the minimum that we've been seeing, but I think that would be more of a metagame call.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's really personal preference.
Right.
A lot of people are trying Stoneblade right now in all kinds of different colors. I think I've seen Orzhov in 5-0 dumps. I've seen Mardu.
I was gonna say some Abzan.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen Abzan, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was.
I just want to put a sword on a Siege Rhino.
I don't want to break it to you. I don't want to break it to you. Sorry. Siege Rhino got put out to pasture. It went up to a farm upstate.
Oh, rip.
Yeah.
Rip Siege Rhino. Yeah. You know what? Yeah, at least he's living his best life now, right?
Yeah.
That MTG companion app, did you play around with that at all?
I downloaded the app as soon as I saw the announcement was made. I think it's a good idea to have because it allows people, especially with what's been going on, it allows people to, like, you know, get together if they can and do, if they can do so safely. You know, we can get homemade little mini tournaments going on. We can get some draft going. We can get some modern going. And I think it's a really, I think it's a good tool to have. The fact that I think it ties in with your arena account because it's the replacement for the DCI, right?
I don't know if it's a replacement.
I think they did away with DCI already.
Already?
Yeah, they did away with DCI. They did away with Planeswalker points. So I think everything's tied to your arena account. So like, there, I think that's a way to give like LGS's ways to promote things that are on Arena, you know, give promos, you know, that you can redeem on Arena. Yeah.
I'm kind of glad that if we're going away from Planeswalker points, we're doing that, because Planeswalker points were essentially useless. Like, if you weren't, like, grinding every single day at GP, every weekend at GP. Yeah,
just to get, like, a free buy.
Yeah.
I mean, I've gotten a buy at Magic Fest Vegas, but that was because my opponent didn't show up. And I didn't have to work for that at all. Oh, yeah. I didn't need any Planeswalker points for that.
Those are my favorite rounds where you're just like, oh, my opponent didn't show up. I'm going to go eat a hot dog.
I got to watch Jund lose to, I think it was Mono Green Hydras round one at Magic Fest Vegas. Hell, and that was the last Magic Fest before Hogak was banned. Hell so, yeah. Just to put it into context, this man was a legend.
You want to know who was even more of a legend? My first Magic tournament I went to was an SCG Open over in Tacoma.
Okay.
When they still had him on the west side. Mason got paired against a 6-year-old.
Okay.
That 6-year-old was playing mono green and beat the ever-living shit out of Mason. And Mason's like, I let him win. I'm like, okay, Mason, you let him win. He didn't just, like, wipe the floor with you by turn three both times. That didn't happen.
Mason, I'd like to apologize on Brandon's behalf right now for spilling your tea. You know, just gonna put that out there.
It's still one of my fondest Magic memories. It was a good day to be Brandon to watch that happen.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
You're rough. You're brutal.
Like, if it happened to me, I'd be like, well, damn it. Oof. Like, I'm more proud of that kid for beating me than I am for, like, sad about losing that kid. But there's still a part of me that's like,
yeah, if you lose like that, you know, it's actually kind of impressive.
Right. It feels bad to always, like, beat those kids, but you're like, you know what? I paid $100 to be in this tournament. I'm not going to show sympathy to the 6-year-old right now.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had to run into that situation, luckily.
Lucky you. Yeah. I had to beat, like, a 12-year-old at the last Magic Fest I went to.
Ugh.
And that hurt me. We were playing the same deck, too. I'm like, energy brothers.
You're about to get sent to the Shadow Realm.
Yeah, no, but that MTG companion app's going to be really good also for, like, just setting up, like, tournaments on Arena, because I think they're talking about, like, setting up official tournaments through that app on Arena. I think that was another thing they were thinking about.
Yeah, and I think they did it so it's, like, it would send you your, like, match pairings on your phone.
Yeah.
I think that's a really cool feature as well.
It's a super cool feature. Also, speaking of Arena, Jumpstart on Arena. Have you got to play it at all?
I have not.
It is super fun.
I have like, a love-hate relationship with Historic right now.
Yeah, because all those cards got added into Historic.
I redeemed all my remaining. I had so many wild cards saved up, and I used them all to build into Historic. And immediately after Historic, after I did that, that's when Ugin came out. And that's when all my decks became outdated, and I suddenly didn't have any wild cards left. Right. And I wasn't playing Historic because my computer went to shit, and then Jumpstart happened, so my deck is already out of date. All right.
Yeah, fine.
Fine. Everything's fine.
This is fine.
We're doing this live.
But yeah, no, Jumpstart Arena, if you play the actual Jumpstart, super fun. I haven't got to play any Historic with Jumpstart on there. I've just been grinding standard games trying to get sideboard stuff. More recent news though, the set boosters for Zendikar Rising. Have you got a chance to look at those?
I have not, or I may have in passing, but I don't think I remember them off the top of my head.
Right. So, these are a new type of booster pack. They're for the people that just kind of like to crack the packs more than draft the pack.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I remember what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, they're more for people like me, because I love cracking open packs, even though I can, like, see the dollar bills, like, flying away into the sunset. I know it's not good EV, but I'm just like, yeah, booster packs, let's go.
Always buy singles. Always buy singles whenever you can.
But look at this booster box I got.
But can our listeners see that box?
They can hear it, though. Some magic ASMR for you. All right, we're done with that. But, you know, the set boosters are for people but like me, who like to open packs because they're fun. These packs cost a dollar more than a normal pack, and you only get 12 cards. But you have a chance to get up to 4 rares in a pack. That's unlikely, but there's 4 different slots you can get a rare. You're still guaranteed your 1 rare or mythic.
And then the other ones are, like, less likely.
Yeah, less likely, but still there. It's kind of like collector boosters, how they have those ones set up in certain ways, so certain slots have certain rarity of cards. There's, like, 4 or 5 different sections. I think there's 4. There's, like, the startup section where you get, like, your commons and stuff. And then there's the next section where all the cards are connected in some way. It'll either be through, like, maybe they have the same artist, or maybe they share the same theme, maybe they're all the same color. There's all kinds of different themes.
Yeah.
And the point of that slot is to figure out how all those cards are connected, to be like, ooh, this is fun, wow.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to skip that slot probably every time. But sometimes you can get up to 1 to 6 uncommons. So sometimes you can get, there's your 1 uncommon there. Or you can get up to 6 uncommons, which is
oof.
Cool if you're trying to open a second uncommon, you have a better shot to get those uncommons.
See, that would have been fine when Fatal Push had first gotten created.
Yeah.
Getting 6 chances at a Fatal Push, because that card was hard to find. And
it really was. Like,
in packs, yeah.
Dude, I opened a box, though, and got 2 Fatal Pushes. I was like, hell yeah. I got the average pull rate for these. Let's go. I saw some boxes without any Fatal Pushes, though. Dude, I got an Aether Revolt when it first came out was, like, crazy bad EV, but I got, like, Walking Ballista. I got a freaking Masterpiece Pithing Needle. I got 2 Fatal Pushes. I got everything good in that set. I was like, let's go. Warden was like, if anybody gets a Masterpiece Pithing Needle, let me know. And I was like, oh, hey, Warden. Hey, guy. But, so you get 6 uncommon, up to 6 uncommons in that slot. More than likely, it's going to be 1 uncommon, 5 commons. And then after that, there's the Fireworks one, which is like you get your 6 alternate arts, like the showcases.
Yeah.
And one of them, I think, has a chance to be a rare. The other one's always like a common or uncommon. Either that or that's your 4th chance to get your rare. I don't quite remember. And then after that is your guaranteed rare slot.
Okay.
And then after that is they're doing this new thing called the list. And you can get any card that's on that list. And they're from all over the place in Magic's history.
Yeah, I think
original border and
I think I remember hearing about that, because that reminded me a lot of kind of what they do, what they've been doing with the standard showdown packs for a while, or the promo packs that they were doing, where it was like after they implemented that weird Planeswalker stamp card. It was like there's a certain list of cards, and I remember getting a Zendikar Resurgent in one of those packs.
I got the mono black one. Yeah. So stuff like that. And they're going to have the Planeswalker symbol down in the bottom left, like how the Mystery Boosters have them.
Okay.
That's going to be the only difference. And then other than that, they're going to appear in the original frame and be super cool.
So many different variants of
frames
and cards. No.
yeah, for sure. Also, you get they're doing the art thing like they did with Modern Horizons. You would open it and get a little art card in there.
Cool.
Wow. But now they have a 1 in 5 chance to have a cool,
like, signature, right?
Yeah, a gold signature, though. Like, which will add value if people want to collect those or just a cool
because, like, if there's gonna be like a busted card or something that gets printed and then that has like an art card, then I'm sure that'll probably like rise up in value, kind of just like as a collector's piece. But yeah, no, I like
anything
the idea,
Seth McKinnon. I want the gold signature.
Seth McKinnon's a good artist. He's great.
He's one of my favorites.
Oh yeah, he's great.
Noah Bradley was one of my favorites until he wasn't.
I mean, I never knew the guy. I barely cared enough.
So, right. I mean, I feel that, but
I knew the name. I knew the name, yeah. But I wasn't familiar with him, so.
Yeah. He did all the Fallout Zendikar lands.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, I got on...
All the ones that weren't John Avon. John Avon's another great one.
Yeah, so I jumped on, what, Amonkhet block? So that was after Battle for Zendikar block, way after that. So, yeah, I missed out on that. So I didn't see. Yeah. I didn't get to really see his artwork like that.
Mm-hmm. But, and that's about all we got for news. You got any hot takes you want to add here? You want to go down that Oko rabbit hole again?
No. But I don't know if it's true. I heard there was a rumor with Zendikar Resurgent of like a test card that got leaked, and it was supposed to be like a black green Nissa with a static landfall trigger on it.
Ooh.
That I think it was like if when it has landfall. And then when you hit that landfall trigger, you can up its loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw that, and I don't remember the rest of the text. And I like the design of that card. I think I'm really interested in that card, like for like Commander, for Standard, obviously. So I mean, I'm excited for Zendikar. I'm excited to see what they're gonna bring. Double Masters is cool. I'm glad that they're reprinting all that stuff. And but I mean, either you have the cards or you don't. So, and if you need the cards, you can pick them up. If you don't need them, you don't need them, and I don't need them, so.
Right.
Yeah, but other than that, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there any, like, Double Masters reprints you want to talk about or touch on real quick?
I mean, I like all the reprints. I like most of the reprints. I mean, I like the box toppers. The box toppers look amazing. I mean, I really want those swords. I want that Sophia. I want that Feast and Famine. I mean, there's a Batterskull one, right, too? I think Batterskull has one.
Because I've paid a lot less attention during this spoiler season than I
I think I saw Batterskull. Well, I only kept an eye out once I started seeing the swordskins printed. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, if they get Stoneforge Mystic, which they did, I was like, all right, they're going to start spoiling equipment. So, yeah, I'm really interested in that. I think that's going to be what appeals to, like, most people because it's, like, alternate art, cool, exclusive stuff for Commander, for Modern, and stuff like that.
Right.
And if, I think it does a good job. I think of getting the reprints it needs to, because it gets like the basic versions of cards into the market, but it also has like a premium product for people that want to bling out their decks. Mm-hmm. But the price point on it, as I've heard, there's the $100 packs, which are nuts.
I mean, it's nuts. I think I'm coming more on board with the $100 packs, but I'm still probably not going to buy the $100 packs.
I think more people than they would like to admit are going to at least buy one just to see what it's like, because there's a novelty to it. You're gonna be like, $100, there has to be something good in it, and it's gonna get everyone, and it's gonna be great for some people and really bad for other people. And I mean, that is what it is.
That's why, so they kind of put the four boosters in a box and then price it at the same price as like a regular box. I think they're trying to move the MSRP up on Magic cards. That's why they stopped being like, see, there's no MSRP, and then they raised the price a dollar on the set boosters. They're having like the $100 VIP packs, the collector's boosters.
Yeah.
And that's really for the whales out there. You could still get any of the cards in the VIP pack, except for some of the lands that you can get in Double Masters. Speaking of Double Masters art, that Karn and the Tron land panorama art, it's super cool that they put them all together. My hot take is I fucking hate that art. I like it at all.
I mean, yeah, it's different. I like the fact that there's, regular border modern frame Tron lands out there, because that's a pet peeve when, like, I like when decks have, like, all, like, of the original printing of cards, or if it's, like, all newer cards, but when it's mixed, it really bugs me, and Tron is really guilty of that because of the Tron lands.
You know what? I both love and hate that, because my I like to bring out the worst. I'll have like one white bordered version of one black bordered version of another one, have the freaking ninth edition one, have a foil one somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm the guy who gets tilted by that. Like, yo. Like, I'm gonna not say anything. I'm not gonna let you acknowledge it, but it does bother me.
But you're just
like, this guy has no manners.
You know what? I'm my own worst enemy there, because I'll just play it and I'll be the stupid ass that gets the mine that looks like the tower and put it in play and just be like, haha, I've got Tron. No, you don't.
And it's annoying because a lot of Tron players like to mix and match their arts and stuff like that. And it's like, I feel like every single time I have to like ask, okay, which one is which?
Yeah. I got one more hot take. And that's, I'm still holding out hope that they're going to somehow slip fetch lands into the Zendikar Rising like regular packs. It's either going to be in that collector's slot.
It's going to be in the collector's
boosters. Yeah, I think they're definitely probably going to find a way to put them in the collector's boosters, but I think they're still also going to be available in regular packs, probably as like a lottery card.
Yeah, and just to put it out there, just like everyone else, we want fetch lands to be reprinted like ASAP because yes. the enemy ones are like so dumb expensive. Mm-hmm. It is nuts. Like, I need Scalding Tarns now, and I'm not ready to pay.
I'll be upset if they reprint it with a secret lair art though.
Oh, because this guy's a whale.
Because this guy over here bought two secret lairs.
Yeah, we got a whale over here.
I mean, but you know, I got a good price on those. People were selling them for like $300, $320. And I was like, no. Bruce gave them to me for $220. I was like, MSRP, let's go. I'll take it.
Yeah, I get it.
So, our main topic, let's move into that. Our main topic for today is sideboarding. We touched a little bit on it on our last episode. We were like, you know what, that's actually going to be the topic for this episode. And I kind of want to talk about sideboarding, like how to build a sideboard. We're going to get into kind of the basic idea of what a sideboard is and how to build it, and then talk about more advanced topics, because that's what we are. We want to get that base level in. We want to expand upon it. So the sideboard, there's 15 cards you get to bring in a matchup where you feel like you need different cards to shore up that matchup. Like, a lot of decks right now in Standard, for example, like Bant and Team of Reclamation, they're playing like main board Aether Gusts.
Mm-hmm.
And that card's super good in most matchups, but it's still
one of those cards. In every matchup. It's like, if you're playing against blue white, you're not gonna have a good time.
Or
you're not gonna get any value. Yeah. It's pretty much your sideboard is a wide array of different answers that you can have for specific strategies. Mm-hmm. That might not be as effective in your game one when you're usually going in blind, say at a tournament, and you have your 15 slots are dedicated to either, you know, shoring up, making some uneven matchups a little bit more even. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, packing in responses to the hate that people are going to bring in for your deck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually where you bring in all your different answers. And which might not be effective against every deck, but they're more narrow, they're more niche, but they'll get the job done if you can draw into mm-hmm. your game two, game three.
Right. Building the sideboard, a lot of people, myself included, I'm guilty of it sometimes. I'll just, like, take a sideboard online and just throw it in my deck and call it a day, right?
I think that's a really good... I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm a filthy net decker,
mm-hmm.
so I think... Having a net deck or having a sideboard, like if you see the most common, like the one that just top aided a MTGO prelim or something, you know, you pull up that list and you go card for card on that one. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the entire 75, but most of the time you will keep that 15 intact. And usually, you know, you start off using that, and that's a really good starting point. But usually a more experienced player will have, they will make changes to those sideboards mm-hmm. to better reflect what their metas look like, because while certain net decks will have, you know, sideboards that are designed against a wide answer that are on top, like online, for example, you know, mm-hmm. your LGS or your local playgroup might not have that meta. You might not have anybody playing Burn or mm-hmm. E-tron or what's out. Is it Prowess? Or Bank Control, maybe.
Is it Prowess?
Is it Prowess now because of...
But is it Prowess?
Oh, it's Prowess.
Oh, it's Prowess.
It's Prowess.
Stupid joke I make every
yeah,
time.
No, there's Gruul, there's Is It, there's Rakdos. Like, there's so many different versions of Prowess. Like, but yeah, you might not come across that where when you get your 15, it'll have maybe an answer for that. And then after playing a while, you're going to be like, hey, I never have had to bring in this card, so mm-hmm. let me just take it out.
I'm going to take it out, yeah. I was going to say, like, those sideboards definitely give you, like, a good base level. Like, they top aided, they won that event, right? They obviously have an idea of what they're doing, so.
At least take it into
account. For the most part, like, I stick to those stock sideboards. Not because it's a good practice, but, like, I usually, like you said, only change one or two things, because a lot of those sideboard cards are the cards you want for the matches. Especially
yeah.
if you're playing on Arena, you're like, okay, I see Mono Red literally all day in best yep. of ones because that's where that deck shines. So yep. I'm going to like keep the Mono Red sideboard
you
in there.
You play all the Aether Gusts yeah. in the main.
If you're going to build your own sideboard,
I really do like starting off in Best of Ones and just seeing what's out there. And then kind of putting cards that you feel like are going to shore up those matchups in games 2 and 3. Because, like, Bant, I think, is a super versatile deck. You can build it so many different ways to beat the meta. It really, like, those aggro decks get under it. Like, Mono Green gets under it pretty consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Main board. Once you have the sideboard in, you start bringing in your extra Aether Gust. You start bringing in the answers for that deck. It gets swings, like, way into your favor.
Yep.
Yeah, you bring in your extra Shadow of the Skies, whatever you're going to bring in to help deal with that. Like, it swings it wildly in your favor. Bant Ramp's such a powerful deck. I almost feel like it's
mm-hmm.
a mistake not to play it if you're trying to grind. Because your win percentage just from that deck carrying you alone is going to go up there. Like, you just get draws that they can't beat. You're just like, turn one, Triome, turn two, Jolrael, or like a Growth Spiral, turn three, Uro, into turn four, here's a bunch of garbage stuff.
Okay, so, alright, so we've already described what your sideboards look like, or how, you know, someone might start off building their sideboard, mm-hmm. you know, general advice, but, like, what makes a card a good sideboard card?
I think the easiest way to analyze cards like that is, let's look at Modern, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's more general areas. Like, Standard has a lot of specific answers to specific decks, and they're not exactly, like, just reading the card, you want to see exactly why. But in Modern, let's talk about, like, Rest in Peace.
Mm-hmm.
That card is super, super good against graveyard strategies, super good against decks having graveyard synergies. It shuts off that whole avenue of play for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
You play against, let's say, like Band Control or something, right? They're not playing a lot out of the graveyard except for Uro. That card's pretty much useless against them, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's two mana, exile your graveyard that you're not doing anything with. Sick. Yeah. I'm going to keep playing all my other cards. I'm going to play my Jace, and you're going to have a rough time dealing with it because you spent two mana on a Rest in Peace. But if you're playing against, like, Dredge, right? Their whole deck's centered around the sideboard. Around the graveyard. And so you're shutting off literally their whole deck. So that card is super good in some situations, super bad in other situations, and it's a card you want in the situations where it's good. You put that in the sideboard.
Yeah, so essentially your sideboard cards are cards that are more narrow answers that would get you to where you need to go.
Mm-hmm.
If there's if there's something about their game plan that's causing you to stumble, you would bring in answers for those specific things.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you're playing like a mono red deck, you might want to bring in more spot removal. You might want to have more of the shock is in Standard now,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, you might want to have, you know, your shocks, you know, if you don't have them in the main. You want to bring in sweepers, you know, you won't, mm-hmm. like you mentioned, you bring in your Shatter the Skies.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes not all the decks you're going to play across are creature focused. So sometimes you're going to play something like Bank Control, where you generally want to have answers. You want to have removal, but you want to have removal for enchantments. You want to have removal for planeswalkers. So cards like Fry become better. You have cards like...
I love Fry.
Yeah. Fry is a really good card. Yeah. But yeah, you usually try to play cards that would attack a deck from their specific axis, so that you can get ahead farther than they can, at least hold back their plan long enough to get you to where you need to go. So if a deck, like you said, is a graveyard deck, what you want to do is you want to find a way to hate out their graveyard. So you bring in something like Rest in Peace. You would bring in something like Tormod's Crypt in Standard, mm-hmm. you know, Cling to Dust if you want to get rid of that Uro in Standard. You know, you bring in answers like that. But graveyard hate isn't always relevant. You know, you have counter spells sometimes. Sometimes, like, what you can do is you'll have very narrow counter spells that are made, like Disdainful Stroke, where it's only four or greater.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're dealing with a deck that plays like Ugin, for example, you know, that Disdainful Stroke is going to look real like good.
Bant Ramp mirrors, like, that's hitting most everything in Bant Ramp, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
If you're playing a mono red deck, Aether Gust is amazing. If you're playing an Uro deck, Aether Gust is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want to have cards that don't necessarily advance your game plan, but might be able to stop someone else's game plan long enough for you to get through.
Right. And now, that being said, if you're on the opposing side of a Rest in Peace, you know they're bringing a Rest in Peace out of mm-hmm. the sideboard. You're not just going to fold to them. You're going to have slots dedicated to your sideboard that are going to
help you in the sideboard matchups.
Yep.
Because in real tournaments and, like, paper tournaments that you play in, like, IRL, I'm not saying arena ones aren't real tournaments, they're great, but IRL tournaments, they're usually always best of three, right? You're going to play more sideboarded games than you are mainboarded games. And so you're going to want to bring in the hate for their hate. Hate the haters.
Yep. Yeah, because you're going to find yourself on the opposing side of someone else's sideboard card. And that's kind of what separates kind of the newer players from someone who's a little bit more experienced. Because when you know you're seeing Rest in Peace and you're playing, for example, Dredge, or if you're playing like Uro and they have Tormod's Crypt or Soul Guide Lantern or something like that, you have to learn how to maneuver around that. Not only, you know, in your gameplay lines, but you also have to have the right removal. You would want to have something like a Back to Nature in your sideboard. Because, I mean, it's very narrow. It says destroy target enchantment, back destroy target artifact. It's three different modes, but we had something like Return to Nature, right?
Where it was a little more. That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, it was a little more limited, but now we have what it said Back to Nature, right? Mm-hmm. So that one is really good because it answers a lot of different things. But when I was thinking of Return to Nature, I was thinking more so of...
I think Back to Nature is the one that blows up all enchantments. It says destroy all enchantments, two green.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that one's dope. But when you're talking about playing against Rest in Peace specifically...
I remember, no. Yeah. So you want to have that answer for their sideboard hate so that once, like, okay, your game plan has been set back. All right, you blow it up. Move on with your game, with your day. You're not going to let that resolve and let the game be over at that point. You know, you had your Uro Aether Gusted. You're going to try to do whatever it takes to get out ahead of that. You know, if they got the Cling to Dust, you're ready to counterspell that if need be. You know, you pack the right answers to attack not only what their initial game plan is, but also to combat what they might try to do to you more specifically now that they know what you're playing. Mm-hmm. They might have more targeted answers for you.
I think another really good sideboard card to talk about is Mystical Dispute.
Oh, yeah. It's a really good card.
So people put it in the sideboard, and at first I was looking at it, and I'm like, why would you ever want to bring this in from the sideboard to the main board? That's just a card that's, like, better when you're slightly ahead or when you're slightly behind.
Yeah, it feels like a spell snare that gets, like, better value.
Right. And so it's normally when you're playing in the main board, it's super good early and then bad late. But then I started realizing people put it in the sideboard for counter mirrors.
Yep.
Because they leave a certain amount of mana open to counter your spell. You get to leave one blue up to counter that counter spell. Yep. And then maybe they have it, but then you have another one. And so you don't need to leave up much mana to ensure your spells are going to resolve and make sure that they can't counter it just because you left this one blue up and you're like, haha.
Yep.
Pay an extra three for that. Now you can't play another counterspell when I play this counterspell. So that's a super powerful sideboard card that I didn't think much of at the beginning, which is why I think it's a little harder to sideboard in standard than it is in modern.
Modern
is such an open field. You just need the broadest answers you can more often than not.
Yeah.
So that's why I like the standard sideboard game a little more than I like the modern one. But the modern sideboard cards are a little easier to evaluate.
Yeah, no. The main difference between standard and modern sideboards is that standard has typically a smaller metagame that they usually have to deal with. It's only like three or four or five different decks. So they'll have like more, they'll have like three copies of a card versus like two copies, you know. They'll...
I like starting off my sideboards as just putting like two of everything in there.
Yeah.
See how relevant it gets. Yeah. And then, if I need to increase that, I'll put more in. But in standard, like you said, you usually know what you want to see. And so you can throw, like, three copies of this in there. Or four copies if you really, really don't like that deck. If you really want to shore up that matchup. But then at that point, you also got to think about, is it worth dedicating four slots on my sideboard to this matchup to get, like, a 10% up on this deck?
You know? Usually, you know, if, like, yeah, okay. So the main difference between standard and modern is that the standard has a more like insulated metagame.
Mm-hmm.
You can have more copies of a certain card. You can have cards that attack more than one deck. Like Aether Gust is just a really good card. Mm-hmm. It doesn't only have to work against mono red. It can work against Uro decks too, conveniently. You know,
and mono green.
You could get away with a little bit more that you'll have those kind of catch all sideboard cards. Whereas in modern, you'll have the more the way more narrow cards, like you'll have your graveyard cards, you'll have like your counterspell, like your control cards, you'll have your burn cards, you'll have your Tron cards, you know, because there are so many different more accesses for decks to attack that you do have to have like the broadest answers, and you're only able to afford usually one slot or two slots or something.
Yeah, I've actually seen people like suggesting maybe in Modern just bringing the sideboard up to 20 cards.
Ew, that which sounds so bad.
It sounds bad, yeah. I understand the sentiment, but because you're so restricted in Modern with how many, with the only 15 cards, you got a lot of crossover between cards.
I think I like the rule parameters around sideboards as is right now. I mean, but yeah, there is a different, you know, metagaming aspect to it when you are talking about sideboarding for Standard versus sideboarding for Modern.
Yeah, for sure. Well, when building the sideboards, what things do you think we need to look out for? Like, we talked a lot about the crossover. We talked a lot about what the cards do, how they fit in. How do you go about building your sideboard? How do you want to... What cards do you want to throw in there more often than not, you know?
I mean, usually just a quick recap of, like, MTG Top 8, MTG Goldfish, you know, just shows you what the first few couple decks are, and then you kind of learn by playing a lot of Arena. Like, you know, when you play Arena, you usually see those sideboard cards brought out against you, and you're like, hey, that actually is pretty good, I'm gonna use that, you know. Like, I didn't think of Wilt being a really good card against like Elspeth Conquers Death, you know, but once I saw someone use that against me, I'm like, oh, I might need to try that. Yeah. You know,
okay, so when you're building the sideboards, yeah, watch out, like you said, for the main decks, whatever's in your local meta, cards that you want in there. Play those best of ones. It'll really help you figure out the format initially. The best of one format's a little bit different than best of three format, just because, like, mono red is less prevalent in best of three.
Yeah.
But you're still going to see it there. I still see it there.
Yeah. I mean, I play it in best of three.
Yeah, right? But what are some bad sideboard practices that you've seen that people have put in? One of the main ones I've seen is, like, people are like, oh, man, this card's really cool. I want to put it in my deck. I don't know where it's going to fit. Let's just throw it in the sideboard.
I mean, like one of the, like, the beginner mistakes is putting a card that you think didn't fit in your main board, and you just, like, really wanted to put it in there, so you kind of just put it in your sideboard.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I mean, that's kind of like a basic mistake, but I think some of it is, like, kind of like over sideboarding, under sideboarding, not knowing what to bring in. Like, you know, sometimes people over sideboard, actually. It's not more about the choices that they bring in or what they decided on their cards, but it's kind of like how they choose to use those cards, you know. Like, if you see someone, like, if you're playing a control deck and you're playing against, like, a Fatal Push deck, a Shock deck, or anything with a bunch of creature removal, and you're playing against a control deck, you know, you're going to take out your spot removal. Well, the control player is probably going to bring in something. They're going to bring in their the Archons. Archons of Sun's Grace is out. Or in Modern, they might bring out Monastery Mentor or Baneslayer Angel. You know, you gotta be careful for that. And yeah,
right, like, if a control deck has a bunch of counter spells and you're like, I want my stuff to resolve, let's bring in all these counter spells and these cards that are gonna let my stuff resolve, they're probably actually gonna be cutting back on counter spells.
Yeah.
And they're gonna be bringing in more answers, because now they have, like, more information about your deck and they know what answers they need.
Yeah.
To actually answer that threat. And so they're going to be worried less about countering it, more about getting rid of it.
Yeah.
Like, just straight up.
Yeah, that's when the answers become a lot more narrower.
Yeah. The control deck usually becomes a lot more proactive games.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes on with sideboarding. You know, you got to try to pump fake them. You got to try to anticipate what your opponent's going to do with their sideboard, you know. And that affects, you know, your decisions. I mean, sometimes one of the answers is cutting out the wrong cards, you know. Like, they're bringing in the correct sideboard cards, but they're siding out, like, the wrong cards that they might still need. Because, I mean, that sometimes happens. Like, I can't say more so about Standard, but I know, for example, like, in Modern, you know, you cut too many creatures from a Collected Company deck, it makes your Collected Companies a lot worse.
Right.
So, usually, what you want to do, you might want to cut down on the Collected Companies. You know, like, you gotta figure out that tension in your deck where you have the correct mix of what you need to get your game plan going. Usually some people, when they sideboard, they take away too much of their own game plan to bring in the answers. So it's like, cool, you've answered your opponent fairly well if you draw into everything you have, but what are you doing for the next, what, 5-10 turns if you can't close out the game because you took out too many of your cards?
Right. I think the main thing with sideboard is
you've got to play the game.
Yeah.
But a lot of the sideboard experience comes from playing the game, running those matches, seeing what's good. It's a time investment. We can tell you like six sideboarding methods all day, but at the end of the day, you gotta do your own diligence and just play the game, see what's out there, see what works, see what stuff you want to put in the sideboard, because some sideboard cards that you're thinking of, other people might not have thought of, and it could just be way better than anything that they were putting in there.
I mean, you have to also be flexible with your sideboards as well. That's one of the biggest tips, too, is that some people, like, okay, maybe they have their sideboard down. You know, maybe they went ahead and they did their, you know, they started with the net deck sideboard, and then they figured out their meta, and then they made their changes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? Metagames change, too. New cards come into the format.
They sure do.
New decks come into the format. Decks adopt different colors, different answers. You know, everybody's sideboard changes. So if you're not updating, I think that's the biggest difference between the main board and the sideboard. The main board is usually your more solid list. Like, changes are made usually a lot less frequently than they are in the sideboard. Your sideboard answers usually have to stay fresh. They have to stay current. Because if you pack, it can even be a detriment, you know, week to week. If you're playing in a tournament circuit, for example. Like, in 1 week, mono red is everywhere. And then everyone's bringing in their mono red answers. And then you bring in something, like, you can get ahead by doing that on people, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sideboards are super flexible, and it's not just what cards change, it's also just, like, the amount of cards. Like, sometimes Bant Ramp will be less prevalent than another deck for a certain week, so you'll shave some numbers of, like, your Mystical Disputes and your big answers. Maybe you take the ECD out of the sideboard for now, and you bring in your other mono-red answers, if that's up there this week. Or stuff like that. Just, your sideboard's super flexible. There's lots of ways to adjust it. And you're not really going to know unless you're playing and make predictions. That's another thing with a sideboard.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Like, you can read a list. You can read all the lists and you can see that they all share, like, common sideboard cards. But until you play them and use them and understand why they were brought in, then you're not really going to learn as much as someone who actually goes ahead and uses those cards and practices with those cards.
Right. Yeah, I definitely see lists where there's, like, two, like, weird, wacky cards on the sideboard, and I'm like, what the hell is that for? And then I go and play with it, and half the time I never bring it in, because maybe they were aiming for something very specific in that tournament that they knew was going to be there. Yeah. Or I get the eureka moment, I'm like, oh, that's what it's for. There we go.
Shark Typhoon.
Main board every
Shark
time.
Typhoon. When I first had Soul Tie with Shark Typhoon, I did that. I did exactly that. And I've said it before on the podcast, and that I looked at the card and I read it as an enchantment. I was like, okay, I saw that in the list. So I was like, I adopted it first in the sideboards. And I was like, I wonder how this is going to be good. I bring it in and I lose because I don't use it correctly. I use it as an enchantment. And then once I figured out, and you had that, you know, that light bulb moment where you're like, oh no, they have to fairy out. All right, I'm going to chuck a 1/1 shark at it. Like, I'm going to tap out after on their end step after they slam down into fairy, be like, all right, that's cool. I'm going to hit it after you down ticked it. You get me? You got to understand where its place is. Sometimes you might have questions about certain sideboard cards, but you have to actually use it to understand not only the context of why that card is good in a bubble, but also how it's good in your deck specifically.
Right. I think we've talked enough about, like, some of the basics of sideboarding and the advanced stuff. Let's just let's talk about what we're kind of doing with our sideboards. What are you putting in your sideboard in Modern right now? You're playing...
I was playing blue-white Stoneblade, so Sharkblade. So the Shark Typhoons have been upgraded from the sideboard to the main board, and they've earned their slot there, which is great. But, like, for as far as their sideboard goes, I mean, it's more or less the same of what Bank Control was, except, I mean, I had to cut down the green cards on Normal Veil of Summers. I mean, just trying to adjust losing a color and trying to find answers, you know, within the color, you know, because sometimes different color decks have different answers, different ways to respond to things.
Right.
And if your deck adjusts and, for example, you know, you gain a color, you get opened up to so many different sideboard options. Whereas, you know, what happened with me, where I went from Bant to Azorius, I dropped one color. So I got cut off from green. So now I have to find what can answer what I had a problem with before, but using only what I have at my disposal. Whereas now I don't have Veil of Summer, so now I have to have answers for the control decks, because I have seen that there are other Stoneblade decks out there that are playing control magic, so that's something I also have to take into account.
Right. you know, earlier we were kind of talking about flexible sideboards, and I've got examples of that. I was running, like, I think I was running 3 disdainful strokes at one point, just because so many people, right when M21 dropped, were ramping into Ugin. They were cheating out Ugin. They were figuring out the way to get Ugin. So I had, like, 3 disdainful strokes, because you can answer Ugin with, like, an ECD, right? The problem is you don't want the Ugin to resolve. You don't want him to downtick and wipe your board. So at first I was like 3 disdainful strokes, super strong. It hit everything at Bant Ramp. It hit Ugin. It hit like the ECDs, everything you wanted it to. I've kind of pulled back on the disdainful stroke. I still play it because people are still playing Ugin, but not nearly as much as they were those first couple of weeks. It was ridiculous. I was like, Ugin.
Yeah, I mean, when a standard All-Star gets reprinted back into standard, I think it is totally fair for people to want to jump. They were able to connect the dots right away. Yeah. Like, yo, we already ramped like crazy. Let's just ramp into Ugin now.
Dude, I was seeing Mono Blacklist playing Ugin. I was seeing, like, obviously there's a Blue-Green list playing Ugin, Bant list playing Ugin. There was, like, Team Rare Elementals playing Ugin. I was like, how many different ways can we play Ugin? Lately, there's been a lot less Ugins. It's been more kind of like regular Team of Reclamation, regular Bant ramp. In fact, I've seen, like, a lot of Bant ramp lists take out Ugin. I'm like, that's dumb. I'm keeping one in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think every time.
One Nissa, one Ugin.
One Nissa?
I think at least.
Oh, yeah, no. I saw somebody actually only play one Nissa, and I was like.
Well, I've seen. Since War of the Spark got printed, I've had Nissa in every single deck I've played. Literally. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no. Yeah, no, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
I definitely stick to 3 Nissa still.
I've done one copy before, I've done two copies mm-hmm. before, I've done the full playset. So I mean, I get it, I see the argument for it, but it really depends, because sometimes, like, that Bant ramp shell, it does change itself too.
It does a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it's constantly changing.
Yeah.
That's the, like I was saying earlier, that deck is, like, so flexible, you can build it so many different ways. Really, the sideboard was dropping the Disdainful Strokes. I put a couple of the Aether Gusts that were in the main board, or in the sideboard, into the main board.
Okay.
Because I've seen a lot of mono green online now.
Okay.
It's like the 3rd most played deck on Arena right now. It goes Team of Reclamation, Bant, mono green. and I've been seeing a lot of mono red. And honestly, I think Wilt is still a super important, like, piece of this metagame.
Blows up Reclamation. There you go. That's all the answer.
It blows up Wilderness or Reclamation. It blows up ECDs. If people are playing Banishing Light, it blows those up.
Yeah.
What it also blows up is Anax in the mono red matchup and Embercleave.
That's good. I wouldn't have thought of that. That's creative.
Yeah. It sucks because then you have to leave up 2 mana to, like, answer the enchantment, which in mono red matchups is sometimes hard to do. But really what gets you more often than those mono red matchups is dying to either, like, Thorbrand that they just were like, turn 4 Thorbrand, or turn 3 Embercleave. So if you are putting them on Embercleave, they're playing in a way like they're attacking with 3 creatures, they have 3 lands up, like, I wonder if this is Embercleave. you're just like,
could it be?
Yeah, no, if it's turn 3, I'm probably gonna leave up the 2 mana for the Embercleave.
And then your opponent has the big brain play where they fake that they flood it out and they attack you with all their mana open. And then they flash in 1 Embercleave. They expect you to answer it. You answer it. And then before combat damage is dealt, you flash in the other one.
What? Yeah, at that point, that's some bad beats. I haven't had that happen.
Oh, yeah. No, I've almost had that happen in Arena, but no. I died before.
Yeah, the guy conceded before he got that.
Yeah.
You ain't doing that to me.
Yeah, because I think what happened is that, like, with that second Embercleave on the stack, they, like, removed the creature I had, like, targeted with. So it's like, oh, okay, I fell off. I'm still going to die. Okay, whatever.
Do you have any 6 sideboard tech you're going to try to throw into Modern or Standard the next couple weeks? You got any predictions?
For Modern, I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do as far as what direction I'm going in, because Shark Typhoon and Stoneblade is great, but I'm kind of just doing the thing where I'm trying to see what is a good color to splash for access to sideboard cards, because I do think I want to play, like, a green-blue-based control shell, or at least, like, a blue-white-based control shell, and I don't know if I have to splash for green for Bant, But I've seen, like, Sultai, I've seen Bant, I've seen Teemer.
So you think it's some pretty big changes
there? I'm seeing that all these decks are coming out, so I'm thinking it's like, okay, people are finding different ways to tackle the metagame. With different colors, they give them different answers to different strategies in different ways. So I'm trying to figure out which one of those is the one that I want to pivot into next.
Mm-hmm.
And really what that does is doing the research and just trying to figure out, okay, why is the black splash better than the red splash? Or what is it worth it to just stay two colors? You get me? You got to weigh all the pros and cons of it before you go into it and then start doing your testing. So, right. I mean, just in that initial area. But I think what I've been doing so far as Stoneblade goes, I think I have a solid 15 for now. I mean, I think I still need just like more answers for like Heatron or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if I think I'm content with the 15 that I have right now, because it's more or less like the metagame's changed, but not too much. It's familiar stuff. It's just I've had to cut down, like, instead of having to run like where I used to have 4 Velosummers, like, it doesn't even matter because I don't run green anymore. But, like, instead of having 4 answers for, like, a control deck, now I only have, like, 2 or 3.
Right.
You know, so it's just, like, doing that, like, shaving off the number of copies now, seeing what is being played more, what is seeing less play, and just cutting down the number of copies and raising them up, kind of. But as far as what I want to do and how I want to attack these different decks on different axes, I think I have my 15 now.
Right. Nice. I'm kind of go with the cop-out answer. I've been playing a lot of Standard. I haven't got to do much Modern. I still have Arcum Astrolabes in my Modern deck. I need to obviously take those out because we can't play those anymore. For Standard, I think the metagame is almost more than solved at this point. I think it's pretty locked in. Yeah. So if I'm going to be changing anything, it's going to be like, maybe I play one less copy of this for one more copy of that, and I don't really know what that is yet.
Yeah, it's the summer set. It's rotation is this next coming set, right? Zendikar, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've heard complaints that people don't want to see, like, Wilderness Reclamation, Nissa, Teferi still, but it's like the format is about to rotate in like 2 months.
And all those cards you just named are out.
So, yeah, they're all gone. Like, it's pseudo ban. Pseudo ban. Right. Remember, rotation is a thing. Because the last time we had that rotation, we had like one of our best standards ever. Because we had like Is It Phoenix? And we had like the mono white list and mono blue tempo.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. But, Soul Tie. That was some fun stuff.
Yeah, no, that was cool.
Yeah.
That was cool. But yeah, I think right now Standard is in a bit of a lull. Like, it has been solved, and we're just kind of, everyone's kind of waiting to see how rotation is going to affect and how people are going to have to attack the metagame when a lot of their cards in their main deck, but not only their main deck, but their sideboards might be rotating out. And I mean, there's going to be new cards that get printed into the upcoming set, but I'm sure there's going to be some answers that were valuable that we're not going to have anymore, that we're going to have to find answers around. Because I think, what, like, Fry's going to rotate out, Veil of Summer's going to rotate. Is it Core 20? Is it up to Core 20, to War of the Spark?
War of the Spark is going to rotate out. So let's see, we've got all the Ravnica's rotating out. We've got War of the Spark rotating out and M20.
So yeah, you'd have Veil of Summer rotating out. You'd have Aether Gust rotating out. You'd have that entire cycle of like the colors, Spell Hosers like rotating out. Like,
you can't still play Veil of Summer in Standard right now.
Oh, that's true. Okay, but with like Modern, I mean, rotation is not a thing. Okay, but the point still stands. There are certain cards that are about to rotate out that you're not going to have access to anymore.
Yeah, I think Uro is actually going to see a downtick in the coming set just because Growth Spiral's out.
Yeah.
Those two cards played really nice together. Because they're just like, oh, I don't have the Uro, I'll play this.
I think Thought Distortion rotates out too.
Oh no.
Which makes me sad. I love that card. Thought Distortion's such a good card. Like, that's such a gacha moment. But anyways,
That card is like variants on steroids because the ceiling for it is so high.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
The floor for it is so low. But
why do you bring it in? You bring it in for the deck that doesn't have that has nothing but non-creature permanents, and you just like, boom, it's all gone.
That's one of those cards we were actually talking about in the last episode where, like, it's definitely a sideboard card because if you play it on the main board, like, you could literally just look at a handful of creatures and get nothing for 6 mana. Yeah,
see, cards that aren't designed for everybody, but for when they're good, they're just chef's kiss.
Right, like, there was one game where he got, like, a card from me playing Bant, and then there was another game where he got five cards out of my hand. I was just like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't do anything about that, but sometimes it happens. Okay. Like, sometimes you can rebuild and get ahead and maybe pull out a win still after that, but usually some thought distortions blow you out.
90% in your favor at that point.
Yeah. Like, thought distortion, casualties of war. Yeah, like, dude, oof.
The first casualties of war is always like, and oof, that fell, hurts. And then the second one is always like, okay, I'm dead.
Yeah. Soul Tie fell off so hard. I'm so sad.
Yeah. You know what? I've still been losing to it, though. Like, I still see people play
Soul Tie. I'm sure. I believe it. I probably would still be playing Soul Tie right now.
I just transitioned into playing, like, a couple of Dovin's Veto's main board, because I wasn't playing any counter spells at the beginning in the main board. And so, like, I was just getting freaking casualties of war to death. Like, yeah. I play the Aether Gust in the main board, because I wasn't playing them for a little bit either.
But, yeah, Aether Gust is weird. Yeah. I have a love-hate relationship with that card.
Yeah. That card's always, like, that card's never, like, actually dead, because you can still kind of put your own stuff on top of your library if you want
to. Yeah, when they're, like, about to try to blow up your Nissa, and then you're like, nope, put it back on top of my deck, Ejectocito, cuz.
Exactly. But that's not really how you want to be playing that card either.
You usually
want to
it's, use it. I mean, you have it there for that option, but that was kind of more of a thing when Aether Gust was in the main that you'd be seeing.
Yeah. Now it's still seen play in the main. Like, I still play two, but like, there was a time where I was playing four main board Aether Gust, you know. So,
and I never agreed with that. Like, with standard, because the metagame is a lot more like, there's a lot less variety. Actually, I should say.
While we're here, we're kind of moving towards the end of the episode. We're already at an hour, which is actually kind of short for us. But is there any odds and ends you want to add? Any points we brought up you want to touch more on? Anything else you want to add?
No, I'm just, I think I just want to say that I'm really excited, especially because I'm looking forward to rotation here with Zendikar. And I'm looking forward to, you know, a modern without Astrolabe, and hopefully everything's good. So I'm really happy with kind of where Magic is going right now, you know. As far as things are going, there still isn't, you know, in paper play, but restrictions have slowly but surely been easing up, which means, you know, we've been able to have a little more time to play Magic with friends, get some Commander going, some, you know, Modern going, and I'm just really happy to see, you know, that starting to happen again, because, you know, these last few months have been pretty brutal for us paper Magic players.
For everybody, but like, yeah, for
oh,
sure.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Yeah. Obviously. Without goes without saying, but third world or first world problems, for sure, obviously.
Man. I need
you
my
can't
cardboard.
Play paper Magic, yeah. When you can't play paper Magic, you know, it really sucks, especially, you know, when there's a financial.
I get to play a little bit less Magic now because my wife's back at work. So when I am actually playing Magic at home, I also got my daughter that I'm trying to keep from playing in the toilet in the bathroom. I'm like, stop, what are you doing? So I don't get to focus as hard. Yeah,
same. Yeah. Like, not a person, not a human, but, you know, cat that basically does the same.
Yeah, I got two cats that also try to beat the crap out of each other.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah. No, it's not great.
It's not great. It's just like, wow. Okay, world star in my living room.
I am also excited for Zendikar, but I think I'm going to pre-order a box of those set boosters just and see what it's like.
Yeah,
it's such
no,
a new experience.
Zendikar, I've been getting a box of every standard set, at least when it came out, just to have, like, just to have, like, inject stuff into my trade binder at least, you know, maybe if I, you know, if I pull something good, like, great, but it's more just to, you know, have stuff because there is a lot of trading going on. But yeah, no, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. There's Zendikar. What else is coming out? We got, like, Commander Legends coming out soon.
All those other things.
That's, like, in November-ish, too, but there's stuff coming down the pipeline, which I'm really excited for. I think Magic has been in a weird place, but I mean the world's been in a weird place too. But yeah. I think it's been getting better.
I think Magic as a whole has been in a pretty good place, but it's just been rough with the whole COVID thing going on. So I'm still loving me some Magic.
Yeah, I mean whether paper play or arena play, there's still ways to play.
Yeah, for sure. However, we got to get it done. All right, well. For now, you can find us on mtgcast.com. I'm still working on the hosting sites to get us onto other apps. It costs money. I might make us a Patreon just if you guys want to support us, help get us onto those other sites.
Bro,
that'd
you
be
need
fantastic.
To start an OnlyFans.
I need to start an OnlyFans.
Hit them up for toe picks. For feet picks. Just like, I'm just putting it out there. Like, I mean, yeah, I'm just helping him advertise.
Hey, it's a legitimate way to make money.
I am in no way connected or affiliated. I am just helping him advertise because he's a friend and I care about him.
Hell yeah. It's a legitimate way to make money. If you're doing it, more power to you. But yeah,
for sure. I think I'm gonna hook us up on Patreon, see what we can do about that. I don't imagine the hosting sites cost a whole lot, so even if we have like 2 Patreons giving us like $3 a month, we could probably get there somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it from us today, folks. Brandon and Felix signing out.
All right, later.
Peace to the masses. Later, dogs.
All right.